North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. Tornadoes, storms with flash flooding are possible in the upper Midwest today, and extreme heat affecting 80 million in the Midwest and East, says the National Weather Service. No relief on heat for days, says ABC News forecaster Samara Theodore.
St. Louis, 106 on Wednesday, picking up the kids from school in Memphis on Tuesday, 111 degrees.
An American doctor volunteering in Gaza telling ABC News every patient he's treating at Nasser Hospital is malnourished, and over 100 aid groups are warning of mass starvation. ABC's Inez de la Quatera.
Israel has been blaming Hamas, saying they've been stealing food and engineering the famine. But an internal U.S. government review failed to find any evidence that Hamas was engaged in widespread diversion of assistance.
Jeffrey Epstein's longtime companion and co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, talking with the deputy attorney general for 9 hours. Sources tell ABC News Maxwell was granted limited immunity. This is ABC News. A Southwest Airlines jet heading to Las Vegas from Southern California took a dramatic plunge shortly after takeoff yesterday after an alert about a nearby plane injuring two flight attendants, according to the FAA and passengers. There are plenty of shops to visit in Artist Alley at the San Diego Comic-Con, but one seller really stands out, Maddox Mendonca, who's 11.
I think it would be cool if I could be like a comic artist for like maybe Marvel or DC or something.
Mendonca's mom, Marissa, says he's been drawing for years already, selling his pieces on his own website.
He just was obsessively coloring, drawing since he could hold a crayon, and we knew from a very young age that this was going to be his future.
Mendonca putting some money away for school, but also donating a portion of sales to Children's Hospital Los Angeles in honor of his brother, who has had to undergo surgeries for his eyesight. Chuck Severson, ABC News.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Baby bald eagles near the Great Lakes are testing positive for PFAS and other toxic chemicals. Researchers found that eagles living near the Great Lakes had 6 times more toxic chemicals in their bloodstreams than inland populations. Other chemicals found in the baby eagles' bloodstreams were DDT and PCBs, which were banned decades ago. A small Wisconsin school district just got some big clean energy bragging rights. The Elva Strum School District in Trempealeau County unveiled 184 ground mount solar panels that will deliver about 20% of the district's energy needs and will be a living classroom for students to learn about solar energy and energy data. The installation cost $150,000 and will pay for itself through energy bill savings in about 8 years. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. Even some of the lawmakers who voted for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act say they weren't aware of everything in it. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
UW-Madison political science professor Barry Burden says the effects of the bill's most controversial parts, like changes to Medicaid and SNAP, won't be felt until after the next midterm election. He says it's fair to think the timing is strategic.
It's almost certain that there are Republicans saying, look, this is going to hurt me back in my state or district as I try to win re-election next year. Can we please put off the pain for the Medicaid recipients and the SNAP recipients until after the midterms?
Burden says the vote became a decision on whether to support the president rather than a focus on the bill's merits. Democrats have already seized on the opportunity to target their GOP colleagues' seats in next year's midterms. Burden says while the attention was primarily focused on tax cuts and Medicaid, many elements of the bill were not thoroughly scrutinized. He thinks the nation will continue to discover consequences of the new law for years.
It's common for Congress nowadays to pass omnibus bills that are really large budget packages. And it's difficult for any member of Congress to keep track of all the things that are there. But this was one of those omnibus bills on steroids.
Many provisions didn't get any discussion on the House or Senate floor, like a $40 million National Garden of American Heroes sculpture park. Burden says Trump's pressure to sign the bill by July 4th was a key factor in getting it passed.
Since President Trump took office in January, there's been very little legislating. Almost no bills passed through the House and Senate and sent to President Trump's desk. This was one. This was a hallmark piece of legislation. It's going to be a defining piece of legislation in next year's midterms.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Northern Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Sunny today, highs near 85. Southwest winds up to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s. Mostly sunny for Sunday, highs in the upper 80s. 66 with showers and storms on Sunday night. Sunny and 86 Monday.
Right now, it's 84.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Ben Giles, founder of Laughable Productions and the funniest person in Oshkosh contest. Then, If Walls Could Talk host and podcaster Mike Siegel joins the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 6 till 8.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Saturday, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and chairman of the board, producer Jacob. There he is. Jacob, come on. That's how we need you to be introduced right there, man, with gusto and authority. Because there is no other chairman of the board.
Well, Tim, I'm producer Jacob, and I said it with authority. And I'm glad to be here. Really appreciate you inviting me on to continue doing the thing I do on every show.
Well, we appreciate you. And, hey, everybody, Civic Media, particularly driving around on a Saturday somewhere in Wisconsin, maybe up in Minocqua, getting a beer at the Minocqua Brewery. Say hi to our friends up there. We like the Minocqua Brewery. Maybe you're up in Ashland hanging out on Lake Superior. Hey, maybe you're even in Racine. Some people are in Racine. Here's the deal. We love that you're listening to Busted Pencils on Civic Media, either radio stations, on the app, however you get to it. And Jacob, we're in Michigan now and Minnesota, right?
Why, Tim, that is correct. We are in Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. If it has an M or an upside down M to start it off, it's pretty soon we're going to be in all those states.
Well, there you go. So, wow, Civic Media is growing. Johnny, this is pretty cool when you think about this, right? The trip, because, you know, when we were doing Busted Pencils and it was there and, you know, our man Luke was our producer, it was, you know, what was it, just mad radio, right?
I loved it. Yeah,
Madison,
it's growing, man. It's like growing like a chia pet all the way across the state, growing like kudzu all over the place.
Well, I mean, it's truly becoming a Midwest.
That's type great. Of,
yep. You know, and the expansion. But I appreciate the fact that, you know, we got to be there when it was, you know, that little radio station in Madison and a little radio station in Milwaukee. And we were doing Busted Pencils live every Tuesday night. And we were there for the emergence of what is now Civic Media and truly becoming, you know, a just an incredible voice in the Midwest, bringing democracy, local radio programming to all of those little towns that are there. So, hey, if it sounds like I'm kissing Civic Media's butt, I might be, you know.
Hey, man, just pumping their tires, big fans. I mean, it's local radio refreshed, and I love the idea of local on top of local on top of local on top of local, because when you you know, connect small democracies together. Well, by golly, there you have it. The kind of democracy that we're advocating for all the time here. And so it's exciting to have listenership locally and thinking about local in a couple of different contexts.
Yeah, there's just this whole idea of local. I mean, the concept that, you know, and we were, Johnny and I, we were like excited. It was like, wait, civic media, you know, advocation of democracy. Like, holy crap, we fit right in. This is great. And here we are now. You know, so if you're out in Minnesota, if you're in Michigan too, hey, welcome. Welcome to Busted Pencils. What do we do on Busted Pencils? We do not talk about blackboards, chalkboards, bulletin boards, and what kind of crayons are better than others. They're like, this is a teacher show. No, no, no. Hey, we kind of contextualize education, you know, the things that are happening at your public school or should be happening at your public school so that you are informed, knowing what's going on, and potentially talking to your neighbor about what's happening in your public schools. Because more than anything, what Johnny and I really want to do is have a conversation to be able for you to go out and continue those conversations with your neighbors locally. Because, yeah, if we're anything, we are 100% advocates of public schools from the framing of democracy, but we also will, when required, let you know that a lot of sometimes the things that go on in public schools, particularly when it comes to teaching and learning, Johnny and I are going to be there to call out sometimes things that aren't really that great. So, you know, I mean, John, right? I know I'm on a little tangent here. But,
no, it's great. I mean, you're kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
You know, the listener out there to what the radio show's about. Educated educators talking education. I think, Tim, we are also a show for teachers. So we do kind of time straight into that. I kind of like to think of us, Tim, as car talk. But for, you know, the show Car Talk on NPR, Click and Clack. We're like click and clack of the public education world, higher education, elementary education, middle school, high school, all those things. But especially, like you said, Tim, public education as a bedrock of democracy. We are both teachers. You know, we had a great career of teaching, you know, parlayed that into becoming teacher educators, you know, education researchers. So when we joke around, it's not really a joke, but when we throw that tagline out there, educated educators talking education, that's exactly what this show is. And the thing about the show that's exciting, Tim, is, you know, there's always something going on related to education in our communities, in our schools, in our own learning, because like learning is a lifetime, you know, task. So, you know, we're always just chopping it up, talking, you know, put a lot of hot air out there for our listeners, but that's a great way to kind of refresh. You know, if it has anything to do with schools, sometimes it's like policy or legislation. Other times it's budget stuff. Sometimes it's just talking about school practices, maybe about high stakes testing, what they've done to our classrooms or things like that, you know, or like the change in teacher labor because of AI. That's been a big topic lately. We've talked a lot about, but you know, you name it. If it's being talked about in education, well, click and clack here. Well, not actually. You know, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and Jacob, chairman of the board, you know, we're here talking about it all week long in our weekly podcast drops.
Yes.
But then also on the wonderful, and you're listening to it now, Saturday broadcast. So we love being here at Civic Media and doing that. So, yeah, if it's related to education, well, we're talking about it. Gonna throw it in and chew on that.
I love that. And you know, a little refresh here today for, you know, particularly any of the new listeners out in those new markets.
Any newbies.
Any
new pencil busters out there.
Well, just think though, if you're out there in Michigan or Minnesota, first time you're listening, just understand this. There are people listening with you in Finland. So just putting that out there, you're
all over the place. Because you can download these podcasts or you can listen from anywhere on the Civic Media app. So yeah, we've got, you know, friends and colleagues teaching all around the world that we get to talk with often and, you know, bring some of those topics into the show as well. So always lots of surprises, always lots of great guests. Tim, now that we've refreshed things, let's talk about the week, man. What's your guys' week has been like?
Here's
summertime, fellas. It's summertime.
It's summer. It's hot. It's all those things. But you know what I do though too is every Thursday morning, I'm a guest on the John and Gordy show out of the Madison station, and you know, we kind of do a recap of what's going on in Busted Pencils, and we got onto this topic of. You know, big headlines out there, Columbia paying out $220 million as, you know, John, help me if I'm wrong here, but as a fine in violation of Title 10?
Six, but...
Title 6, okay. So, a violation of Title 6. So, what's happening here on the face is Columbia... is saying, yes, we violated Title VI. Here's $220 million. Sorry, I don't know. Okay, what is Title VI? How is that? You know, what did Columbia do? We're going to talk a lot about that today in a way that hopefully we can get some deeper understanding as instead of the polarization that I think is really going on around this that is creating a kind of push against higher education to the standpoint of where we might actually create in higher education something at the end of the day that we don't really want. And what we really want is more freedom. And what's happening here might not really be an indicator for more freedom. John, I'm just going to point this out and contextualize this. So back in 2007, 2008, I brought in a guest speaker to my campus there, and you know, great educator, was bringing him in to talk about education, and next thing you know, I got a call from the academic office saying, "Did you invite so and so to campus?" And I said, well, yeah, he's like an awesome educator. He's got a great book out there. He's a great speaker. Did you know what he did in the past? I mean, he was a Vietnam War he did more than protest. He blew stuff up, Tim. We're talking about Bill Ayers. Johnny, who's been on our show a few times.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bills. Yeah.
You know, and I had invited him to campus, and it was, you know, polarizing in this local rural community of Pennsylvania that I was bringing in this, you know, according to the critique of people who were saying he's a devout Marxist, potentially communist. Anti-American, and in fact, as being part of the Weather Underground, actually was a terrorist. And how could this institution support bringing a terrorist to campus? Well, guess what we did? We brought this person to campus. And guess what happened when they came to campus? There were protests of people standing out there, and they had protests. And people showed up, and Bill came, and Bill talked for an hour. And some of those people who actually came in to hear him say the things, they came ready. In fact, there was a group of three guys, seriously, in the back, had just come back from duck hunting. They're in their camouflage clothes, and they wanted to challenge him on his right to speak because of what he had done. And within 15 minutes or so, there was a conversation between Bill Ayers and these three duck hunters. And when it came to, they looked at me and said, he's actually pretty good on education. I think we have something that we can agree on. And so what happened there was a lot of people got really uptight about who was coming to campus, potentially even... But it was a protest. People protested peacefully. People showed up and spoke. We didn't shut him down. I'm kind of thinking that's a model of what we should be doing. And is that, have we gone too far? 220 million, a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, Tim, I got a lot to respond to when we come back, man, because you served up a whole cornucopia of things, man. A
lot of going on. Yeah, busted pencils, though, fully leaded. Education talk. We'll be right back.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Hear every Brewer game all season long right here on WBZH.
Swinging a bouncer into third, double play ball. Ortiz for Terang for one, the first to double play.
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball on 96.9 WBZH, the Buzz of the North.
Swinging a fly ball, right center field. It is up, it is gone! Off the top of the wall!
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball on 96.9 WBZH, the Buzz of the North.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's ice cream month, and did you know you can celebrate at this area stop along the state's ice cream trail? Here's the scoop.
Now, in Wisconsin, we've got 49 different licensed ice cream plants that are making it. But this map focuses in on unique stops in Wisconsin. Every one of them's got a story.
That's Pam Yonke, known as the Fabulous Farm Babe. She says the current trail includes 20 locations, each one from Hayward to La Crosse, Madison, and then north to Appleton, Green Bay, and Door County, dishes out delicious, locally made ice cream.
I've been to one or two, but I'm surprised by how few I've gotten a chance to visit, and I'm a pretty big ice cream fan.
Find the trail at the website gatherwisconsin.com and add your own local favorite there, too. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Ooh, yeah. Busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated. Educators talking education. For all the Civic Media listeners right now, it is Saturday. For all you downloaders, it's whatever day it is. We appreciate you. Like us. Leave us a comment. You know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're else. You know, actually, too, iHeart Podcast listeners. I know there are some of you out there. You can find us on the iHeart podcast station too, just in case. I didn't even know that, guys, until I found us on the web listed in the iHeart directory of podcasts. So,
hey, Tim, that's why we say it to end every show. Wherever it is you get your podcast, you can find us. You know, Tim, in the first part, the first segment of, you know, this broadcast, though, you got into a couple of different things, man. And like, let's tease them apart a little bit because I think they're related, right? You were talking about that you were sharing a story of bringing Bill Ayers, who is a, I would say, you know, a radical activist. I don't even necessarily know if that's the accurate term that might raise alarm for folks, you know, and kind of spark the kinds of protests that you had on your campus. But, you know, I'd say he's far left in thinking radically about democracy and about peace, really. And, you know, stemming out of an era of, you know, anti-war protest and student organizing around democracies, you know, particularly in the Midwest where a lot of our listeners are. So, you know, in Detroit and Chicago and amongst laborers. And it sparked kind of an interesting dynamic on your campus. And you were talking about that also related to this week's news about Columbia. And so I want to tease these two things apart because I think they're related. We've had conversations about freedom of speech and about the difference between freedom of speech and hate speech.
Mm.
Right. And so especially in a democracy and thinking about universities are a characteristic of strong democracies around the world. They're a sort of a signifier. If we're to say, you know, is a government a democratic government or is a nation democratic, we would look to see things like a free university. I don't mean free like it's no payment to go there. I mean like free speech and the free thought of ideas on campuses, which means, you know, sometimes you might not agree with those ideas, but that's an important value, right, in freedom and liberty, especially in academic freedom as a signifier of a strong democracy. The free flow and exchange of ideas. Now, that also goes along with to be done in a nonviolent conflict kind of way. Disagreement can be conflict. We can mm-hmm. vehemently disagree about topics. Say maybe we have, you know, a capitalist economics professor talking and, you know, a Keynesian economics professor, or maybe even something like Marxist, Tim, like you.
No.
I'm just teasing. or like people thought Bill Ayers was. But, you know, this idea around like having different viewpoints that could be radically opposed to one another, but insurance that violent conflict isn't, you know, the standard of this. And so free speech and hate speech sort of sometimes get a little blurry between each other because on university campuses, actually in public spaces, hate speech is not tolerated, right? And especially in learning environments like universities, hate speech crosses the line of free speech. So once you cross into the murky area of, you know, being really closely connected to suggesting violence against people, against any particular group of people, right? Or harm or hurt or fear or, you know, like all those kinds of threats that are actually connected to, you know, the unsafe environment.
Yeah.
For students or for people working in that environment or attending, you've crossed over from free speech into hate speech. And hate speech is not, you know, allowed. It's not permissible on our campuses, you know, nor in our public spaces. And so that's why I would say like apples and oranges in terms of some of the things that Columbia is dealing with. And we're going to unpack that in a minute because that's a whole rat's nest of stuff this week too, that I think overall has a bigger theme, Tim, that we got to get into with our listeners here. But the idea that, you know, Bill Ayers coming, having a really different idea about, you know, what schools ought to be and what they are doing in our communities and how, you know, equal education for all kids is really important. You know, do we care about children? Should we care about all children? Because right now in schools, we kind of haven't been caring so much about, you know, poor working class or black and brown children in schools. And so, you know, Bill Ayers is very vocal about those kinds of things related to education and about democracy and human rights. And you know, and so his views may be different than, say, conservatives in education. Neither of those groups has the right to cross over into sort of hate speech. And I think the stuff related to Columbia, I'm not going to get into the details, but I think across our campuses around this, you know, country, and Tim, you and I got to be at the UW-Madison protest. And in fact, not that we are protesting at them. We happened to be at the John and Gordy show morning and
we were journalists.
Yeah. So we were kind of just, you know, just witnesses to a younger generation to see seemingly in a peaceful protest on a college campus. We don't have all the details of that, but that was happening around the country, Tim. And I think by and large, everything I witnessed, not only in Madison, but on other college campuses, didn't cross over into hate speech that I knew that I could like easily identify as that. However, this is a complex context in terms of if somebody says they feel unsafe, are they truly unsafe? And so, you know, Jewish students felt unsafe on Columbia's campus. I'm not going to say they weren't. So this is one of those areas, I think, apples and oranges related to the Bill Ayers thing. Having these conversations on our campuses have gotten complex. And when we come back, let's dive right into, though, kind of this Columbia payout settlement deal, because I think it's indicator of a bigger issue going on.
Bus defenses.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Tornadoes, storms with flash flooding are possible in the upper Midwest today, and extreme heat affecting 80 million in the Midwest and East, says the National Weather Service. No relief on heat for days, says ABC News forecaster Samara Theodore.
St. Louis, 106 on Wednesday, picking up the kids from school in Memphis on Tuesday, 111 degrees.
An American doctor volunteering in Gaza telling ABC News every patient he's treating at Nasser Hospital is malnourished. And over 100 aid groups are warning of mass starvation. ABC's Inez de la Quatera.
Israel has been blaming Hamas, saying they've been stealing food and engineering the famine. But an internal U.S. government review failed to find any evidence that Hamas was engaged in widespread diversion of assistance.
Jeffrey Epstein's longtime companion and co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, talking with the deputy attorney general for 9 hours. Sources tell ABC News Maxwell was granted limited immunity. This is ABC News.
Brewers baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers host the Miami Marlins. Lefty Jose Quintana on the mound for Milwaukee against Miami right-hander Jansen Junk. The Crew losing last night 5-1. Pitcher Freddie Peralta said there was a real cat-and-mouse game going on between him and the Marlins batters.
I was able to speed them up a little bit because they were trying to slow me down, and I was just trying to get them quick on the box and try to make my pitch and made them out quick because they knew what they were. But we realized that we had no time, and we made the adjustment.
NFL in Green Bay, Mark Murphy saying goodbye after 17 years as the Packers president and CEO. Murphy holding a final press conference after the shareholders meeting that drew over 6,000 shareholders. Murphy's advice to his successor, Ed Policy.
Fire quickly, hire slowly. So take your time, you know, when you're hiring people.
That's Mark Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Phineas and Ferb are coming back in 2026. Season 5 is currently on the air, but it's being called a revival. At Comic-Con last week in San Diego, the producers celebrated said revival of the Disney show, which launched 10 new episodes June 5th, and announced that the next batch of episodes will drop next year. Phineas and Ferb debuted in 2007, but went off the air in 2015. The USA Network has announced it has canceled Resident Alien, despite the show carving out a nice following over its 4 seasons. The announcement was made right before the season 4 finale last week. The sci-fi comedy is about an alien who is also a doctor in a small town and tries to conceal his identity. The show is based on a book of the same title. Executive producer Chris Sheridan says he wasn't totally caught off guard by the surprise, and for what it's worth, says the season 4 finale episode is his favorite of the whole series. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, hazy, warm, muggy tonight with lows only falling to the upper 60s. Partly sunny, hot, and humid tomorrow. Extreme heat watch. High near 90. Heat index triple digits. Evening storms developing. Some could be strong with heavy rain. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All of these things should sound off alarm bells bigly. And you see what Donald Trump's doing with Harvard and with Columbia. You see what he's doing with Paramount. ABC capitulated in a lawsuit to Trump. We're America. We're not Hungary. We're a democracy. We're always going to be a democracy. Yeah, that's what they thought in Hungary. The way that Viktor Orban and the right wing gained power was by using a little bit of power to get more power, to use pressure on networks.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the Wisconsin News headlines for the weekend, who may be in the running for governor next, and previewing our Tuesday show with Joe Thomas. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, take your head off the dashboard. Don't hit it that hard. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators, talking education. Dr. Tim Slecker, me, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, producer. Here we are, you know, breaking it down, trying to take a very complex, detail-rich, emotionally laden topic and trying to help make more sense of it as best we can. And Johnny, you know, and maybe my story didn't really work out the way I had intended, and that's fine. We could try that another time, because what you were saying though, what's happening and what should happen, and hate speech versus free speech, you know, that's what's at the heart of what's happening. So I'm going to ask this question, Johnny, and say, so what we know are the facts as best we can find facts, not alternative facts, but our best, you know, sourcing, and we could go back and forth on this. But Columbia paid out $200 million in response to a Department of Education, Department of Justice probe into anti-Semitism, and therefore paid out $200 because this was considered a Title VI violation. However, Columbia paid this out with also no admission that they had done anything wrong.
And Tim, if I could add, and I think, John, Jacob, you're thinking the same thing. We should say that the settlement for $200 million seems to have been in response to kind of wrapping up a number of different things that were being looked into. And again, as Johnny, we were talking about in the break, the statement from Columbia did not admit guilt. And so it's a little bit muddied as to what you can take away from it, clearly, from what Columbia wants to say about their role in this situation.
Yeah.
And they got $400 million in grants back. Restored to him.
Yeah.
So this is a thing, Tim, I think it's important to get into, is there's, you know, we've talked about it. We've covered, you know, the Trump administration and the Harvard story a bit on here. And, you know, Harvard is doing the opposite thing as Columbia in this sense. They're kind of digging in, saying you'll get none and we'll do what we're going to do. And, you know, the Trump administration says, well, then you'll get the full wrath of what we have coming. You know, Columbia is at the table, and I'm making jokes about it because it's actually quite serious, but, you know, let's have a little fun with it. There's a little book out there, Tim. I think you recommended it to me, The Art of the Deal. I'm just kidding. Oh, I'm just kidding. But this is a kind, it kind of reads to me as a kind of negotiation kind of tactic. Mm. It's like, remember in history class, Tim, when we learned about, you know, walk softly but carry a big stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of, you know, presidential approach to doing politics it historically, but this is more of a, like, walk loudly, carry many big sticks and spiked bats, and meet your you know, adversary or even potential ally as they are an adversary, and then kind of, you know, duke it out and settle things as you go, blow for blow. Because what you have here is, you know, there are several investigations into Columbia, not only Columbia, but institutions of higher ed targeted by the Trump administration right now for a number of different you know, I guess I'll call them like infractions related to, you know, those kind of top down, you know, a letter to a colleague kind of things we got back in January. You remember? So there were all these things that the Trump administration immediately went into action saying that, you know, all institutions of education had to follow the following kinds of, you know, elimination of DEI, all these kinds of, you know, changes that we talked about in the past, and we should probably do a refresher show on. But nonetheless, there are targeted universities, and we've talked about Harvard, and obviously Columbia is another one of those. And so there are a number of investigations into the ways that Columbia aren't, you know, doing what the Trump administration wants, institutions of higher ed. This is, Tim, you like to call it a chilling effect. Mm-hmm. This is one of those big institutions that we all look to in higher ed, like Harvard. Columbia is, you know, centrally located in a position of, you know, cultural influence, mm-hmm. a lot of political theory, a lot of economic theory coming out of Columbia and opposition to Donald Trump. So this is like one of his perceived adversaries, even though universities are the site of free exchange of ideas.
Right.
So it's not necessarily like the university, you know, is anti-Trump, although the sentiment likely is, because he's anti-democratic as, you know, a kind of like leader that he is, and anti-human rights. But nonetheless, Columbia is, you know, under scrutiny. And as part of their being under scrutiny, right, the protests around the conflict in Gaza, we had witnessed some of those protests at the UW-Madison when we were together at Madison, and certainly on our campuses around the country. Listeners, you probably are familiar with those kinds of protests around the country, as there is with many conflicts. Like, you know, part of democracy is nonviolent civil disobedience, is the right to gather and to say as people, hey, maybe this war or this kind of human right violation happening around the world isn't something we en masse support. So, you know, it's an attempt to, you know, have a conversation sometimes where conversations can't be had. So again, we're not getting into the particulars because that was a messy political thing that we're kind of getting sorted out as we learn more. But the idea here is, as part of it, right, Jacob said Columbia didn't admit like, oh yeah, we're guilty. In fact, you know, allowing some of the protesting to happen was in fact, you know, supporting anti-Semitism and whatnot. And there certainly could have been bleedovers into hate speech. Remember where we talked about free speech and hate speech sometimes get messy, and that is the university's responsibility to be the mediator of that kind of
right.
thing. That is a governmental responsibility. So there may be some need to look at that more closely. I know every college campus is doing so as they're, you know, they're conducting their policies around free speech. But the piece here I want to highlight, Tim, is when I come back full circle around to the negotiation tactic. It's like saying, well, I'm going to take this and I'm going to slap you with this and we're going to investigate you for this and we're going to charge you this. And then they're going to settle out of court, you know, $200 million saved. You get $200 million, but give us $400 million back in grants, right? And so Columbia's playing ball, right? That's how I read this. Columbia's playing ball. They're at the table of the art of the deal. And I'm making a joke around it because I'm obviously not in a position to, you know, have the facts around how is this deal actually going down. But in my head, and as a reader, you know, someone consuming what the news is saying, you know, multiple sources, not just liberal media or conservative media, right? But the news I'm getting, you know, it reminds me of like, you know, this idea of like, we're going to duke it out. We're really going to slug it out until we land on something and we agree. And so, you know, Columbia pays $200 million settlement to say, okay, stop probing. And, you know, then the federal government says, okay, well, here's your $400 million in grants that we had frozen and taken away back. So it seems as though, and we'll follow this more closely, but it seems as though, you know, Columbia is up 200 grand in this, you know,
okay,
like 200 million, they're up 200 million. If they lost 200 million in a settlement, but got 400 million in grants back. So, you know, it just seems like this sort of style of mediating that is absolutely about, you know, keeping conflict going, making headlines, you know, being sensationalized and loud about this. It is not about, you know, resolve or what's best for students or faculty or, you know, democracy. Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, and boy.
It's a pissing contest.
What I'm frustrated about, as you said, the chilling effect here, the payout, whatever you want to call it, you know, the art of the deal, is to realize that the Trump administration, though, currently isn't going to stop the type of harassment, even though Colombia gets to say we didn't do anything wrong, but here's your $200 million. It starts setting this example.
Well, they didn't say they didn't do anything wrong. They just said, you know, settlement, let's get this done.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, just, you know, make it go away. But
there's no admission of guilt with the settlement, but there's no denial of it either.
Right. Okay. But, you know, how did we get here? How are we at the point? How does Trump have, you know, the ability, how does any one politician create the ability to bring a Colombia to the table to do these things? And it's by pushing this narrative. What I want to say is that colleges are anti-right, they're woke, they're leftists, they're liberal bastions that, in fact, they use what, you know, happened in a lot of the protests around Gaza to further their anti-democratic, anti-freedom agenda. And as we're pointing out, they're what happened on those campuses, you know, how did we get there? I think there are issues where the campuses need to do a much better job. I'm going to take it back to a bigger, broader context. You get somebody from the right wing or the, you know, the middle ground or an alternative stance, you bring them to campus and you make sure that they have the right to show up and talk. And we do the same thing that we did, you know, for Bill Ayers. We gave him the ability to come in and talk, but we also gave everybody else the ability to protest, protest with freedom, and that preserved what the university is supposed to be for. Not a promotion of Bill Ayers and what Bill Ayers was doing, a conversation about the talk. It was not to promote and do away with people on the right at that time felt was their constitutional right to show up and protest. No, all of those things happened, and they should happen on college campuses all the time. What's happening in these arts of the deals, as you're pointing out, is that actually the big loud message for lots of other institutions who don't have $200 million to pay out is that I think what you're going to see is more of a leaning towards, let's not do anything that would potentially, you know, light the fire under this administration. And so there's going to be this kind of, you know, we're going to enforce mandatory neutrality. And you know, this is where Howard's in. You can't be neutral on a moving train. And you know, and so I'm coming back to this fear and realizing that, okay, let's do a better job. And we talked about this too with Chris Rufo in the Manhattan, the contract on higher education. They use the fact that, you know what, there have been right wing and right ideologues across multiple campuses over the years who've been shouted down and moved out and stuff like that. And they use that happening to now push a new authoritarianism that says, okay, no freedom anymore. It's just a mess, Johnny. And I want our higher education institutions to continue to be places of freedom, disagreement, continued debate, and to know that those are safe places to express those opinions. Busted Pencils, we'll be right back.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day?
because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported last fall that Maine voters approved ballot question 1, limiting contributions to super PACs spending money in state elections. It passed with massive voter support, but like the state's foreign influence ban, was ruled as likely unconstitutional. That's what organizers hoped would happen. The ballot question reads, do you want to set a $5,000 limit for giving to political action committees that spend money independently to support or defeat candidates for office? The act also required super PAC donors to be disclosed. A First Circuit Federal District Court ruled July 15th that both provisions violated free speech protections and pointed to the Citizens United, Buckley v. Vallejo, and other past U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig argues that large contributions to PACs risk quid pro quo corruption of supported candidates, even if a candidate isn't directly speaking with the super PAC. Elon Musk's America PAC and crypto industry super PAC's support of Donald Trump are recent examples. Lessig said in 2023, when the initiative was announced, that it was designed to force the U.S. Supreme Court to answer whether contributions to super PACs can be regulated by states in the same way state candidate contributions are limited. The case will next be appealed in the First Circuit, then could reach the U.S. Supreme Court in late 2026. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Veterans, have you explored your benefits lately? As in, really looked at them? Veterans who bravely served our country deserve the benefits they've earned and life-saving support when they need it. We know that no one can do this alone, and we're stronger when we work together. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs stands ready to serve Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. With our network of partners, like your local county veteran service officer, we can help connect veterans with services such as education, employment, mental health services, veteran ID, long-term care, and more. We stand ready to serve you. For more information, call 1-800-WIS-VETS or visit WISVETS.com. That's WISVETS.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs with funding provided by the Milwaukee Brewers and the Brewers Community Foundation.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Yeah, one more segment, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk, Educated, Educators, Talking Education, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, Chairman of the Boards, on a Saturday for all you Civic Media listeners out there listening live, and for everybody else, wherever you get your podcast, thank you. Thank you for Busting Pencils, and don't worry, at the end of the show, Johnny will give you your mission, which is, I'm going to keep it though, keep it quiet, hold on to that. Johnny, I don't know, within all of this mess is, my fear of not having our institutions as places of valuable disagreement, even potentially to the point where I really am bothered by what so-and-so is saying, but allowing that to continue to happen, I just see that where we're headed in a direction that institutions are going to self-censor and actually enact more policies towards this attempt to be neutral. And that's going to make a campus a really, boring place to be. And it's very antithetical to the mission of higher education, particularly public higher education in a democracy.
Well, Tim, let's be real. It's impossible to do. So it's a little bit of a BS maneuver. So I think you're on point when you were, before we went to the break, you were saying your worry is that, you know, this is, you know, a sign of, you know, authoritarian government to control the free flow of information, right? And to control, in particularly around things like human rights and democracy. So I'm not going to pull any punches and say anything, you know, that I don't firmly believe in. And I firmly believe that, like, these efforts, like you talked about, the chilling effect as it has on campuses. I think saying that, like, it will make campuses try and be neutral is, like, skirting around the issue of saying it's like they're just handing it over to, like, the Manhattan Report.
Right.
To us, if we are to agree, and I'm not going to agree that, like, that in particular, that campuses are left-leaning. I think they are great, a symbol of the free exchange of ideas, you know, being a left-leaning thinker on a campus where, you know, I see all kinds of different thought. I see conservatives, I see, you know, moderates, I see, you know, left radicals, right radicals, but I see them all, you know, engaged in, you know, information and conversation and in disagreeing in a learning environment that doesn't, you know, cause or promote harm. Mm-hmm. And Tim, so to say, like, we could strive for neutrality is just, you know, kidding ourselves.
Yeah.
Like you said before, you can't be neutral on a moving train. You can't be still on a moving train, right? This is what it is. So my fear is, I share with you that it's really about, you know, sending that chilling effect to say, if you're not sharing the ideas, and this is the sort of threat of, like, fascist authoritarian governments, is like, if you're not saying what supports what we want, then it's not allowed. And the tactic to get there is saying, like, well, we have free speech, and it's, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, it should be equal representation, which, Tim, we're going to come back to it again.
Oh yeah, that's a whole other,
the false equivalency. You don't give equal time to the false equivalency. So when we know something is harmful, when we know that something is bad, you know, we're going to cover it as such. But we're also going to give space to the alternate views proportionate to their existence and consensus.
Right.
Right. And so that's really hard sometimes for people to understand, is that you don't give equal time, space, and resources to the false equivalency. Right. Yeah. And I'll use that example for our listener out there. It's like, what is he talking about? I'll use one like climate change, right? 99.9.99, I'm making up a number here, but it's a high one. Close to 100% of scientists agree on some level around, like, climate change and its impact on, you know, where we're headed. There's all kinds of nuances and differences in that, but they agree it's real. Climate change deniers are tiny little fraction,
right,
of the scientific community out there, or even of, like, the informed community. I won't even put science on it, because that's like a dog whistle for people who are saying, well, you're just a, you know, believer in science only. That's a problem now these days, unfortunately. I'm just saying, in general, informed folks, there's a tiny population of that. There's a tiny little sliver that says, what if you're all wrong about this climate change thing? So that's important to recognize, to value it as a different opinion, different idea. But what you have to do is, you can't give it equal time.
Johnny, you can't give the false equivalency. Let me make it really easy and we'll get to where we're supposed to do. Look, flat earthers, you don't get to show up on the same stage as round earthers. Okay. You get to have your own little convention in some crazy hotel. But now it's time for your moment of zen. Democracy comes from ordinary people seeing what they have in common and seeing what they are lacking. When ordinary people get together, they put their energy together.
Thanks for listening to today's Saturday broadcast. And if you want more Busted Pencils, just go on over to Apple, Spotify, and search Busted Pencils. And you can always get at us at civicmedia.com or on the website bustedpencils.com. Remember, you can always find great Busted Pencils content every Monday for homeroom, Wednesdays for class and session, and on Fridays for producer Jacob's Choice.
Woo.
And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always tune in like you did today for Saturday's broadcast, 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.
Is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Every patient he is treating at Nasser Hospital in Gaza is malnourished, says an American doctor volunteering in Gaza, Dr. Travis Maleen.
I'm seeing healthcare workers here that are fainting at work, that are incredibly fatigued here at work. Because they can't get the food they need.
ABC's Inez de la Quatera.
Israel has been blaming Hamas, saying they've been stealing food and engineering the famine. But an internal U.S. government review failed to find any evidence that Hamas was engaged in widespread diversion of assistance.
Amid international outcry, the Israeli military is announcing changes, saying aid airdrops will begin tonight, and that it is designating corridors for UN aid convoys. Tornadoes, storms with flash flooding possible in the upper Midwest today. Extreme heat affecting 80 million in the Midwest and East, says the National Weather Service. This is ABC News.